For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with a weekly look at the world of non-league football. And what a week two. We'll cover all of that in the Non-League Roundup with David Richardson, senior writer at the Non-League Paper, at the back end of this show. But first, two guests, no strangers to the show, but with some great stories to tell, old and new. Always both great value, and I always feel I learn from talking and listening to them every time, and I hope you will too. First up, it's the not-so-shy retiring character that is Mark White. He's the owner, the chairman and manager at Dorking Wanderers in the National South. Some call him Marmite, but I can assure you few wouldn't want him as part of their team. From founding the club in 1999 with a few mates that paid subs to play in the local league to sitting atop now of the National South, once again in a rich vein of form too. There's no denying he's a winner, not just on the field but also off it, and we learn some of the magic that certainly makes Dorking Wanderers one of the more upwardly mobile and moving clubs of the moment. Next up, we focus on what I think is probably the best news of the week, the return of England C. England's non-league team is back with a game against their Welsh counterparts in March. We speak to the returning England C goalkeeping coach Mick Payne about the successes, the benefits and the wonders of the England C story. In a big week, as I say, there's plenty for David Richardson to tell us about and also plenty to preview for this weekend's non-league paper. Much to inform, much to entertain. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So we start the show this week with an old friend of the show and somebody at the heart of why it's possibly still non-league's greatest story. It's over 22 years since he founded a new club, playing in local leagues, 11 promotions on, much joy, much frustration, especially after last season's curtailment. He once again leads his side at the top of the National League South, aiming for promotion to the top tier. It's a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to owner, chairman and manager at Dorking Wanderers, Mr. Mark White. Welcome back, Mark.
Yeah, hi Tim. Yeah, thanks for asking me on.
Well, it's good to get you back on. I mean, let's start with the frustration of last season. We spoke many times on air and off air. You worked so hard spearheading the campaign to get that season finished somewhere or another. That must have been exhausting for you. I mean, when that decision finally came out and it was against you, did you feel like chucking it all in?
No. It drove us on, really, to be honest. But we did feel it was extremely unjust, really, the way that it manifested. But, you know, all good comes from bad. And I think the National League identified that there was lots of failures in their sort of system and their directorship and how it was being run. And you know, they have addressed that. And so, you know, I think the league's now run in a much more orderly fashion, proactively, and you know, that's the positive, really. So, but at the time it was really gutting, and we just felt like, having received funding to carry on, you know, having on that basis taken sponsors' money and everything else, that the finish was really disappointing.
Yeah, but as you say, yeah, from everything bad always comes something good. If you're of the right mindset, and you've always been of that mindset, you're top of the league. Is it 8 unbeaten in the league, I think, at the moment? 3 points clear of Maidstone. There's a bit of a gap as well developing below them. But it's form, I think, is the big marker. You know, your run of wins, including that Boxing Day 8-0 win at home to Haven at Waterlooville, 5-1 home win over Ebbsfleet United last weekend. That must be the thing that's setting fear in the hearts and minds of those that are going to play you now as the season comes to an end.
Yeah, look, there's obviously certain clubs that when you see them at the top of the table, you're more fearful of them. And you know, we have got a reputation of being a club that knows how to win. And when people see us there, they expect a little bit, and it does put a bit of fear into the opposition. I mean, we're in the right place at the right time. It's, you know, we're just, you know, going into Feb, and it has been a competitive league, but it was a bit of a red herring, really, this year, that one, because, yes, it's been competitive, but the way the fixtures were structured, a lot less midweek this year. It's a longer season. So where we should normally be playing a certain amount of fixtures before Christmas, we're only halfway stage, just over. So, you know, it's just started to sort itself out. and we're in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and Saturday you travel to Billericay, so a top against bottom clasher, but there aren't any easy games in this division. And I guess as teams change their tactics and, you know, maybe stick more men behind the ball to try and simply nullify you, that's probably going to make it even harder for you to keep up this momentum.
Yeah, I mean, look, we expect a tough game every week, as you say, Tim. You're absolutely right. Billericay are, I think, 6 unbeaten. They've had a changing of the guard, lots of new players, and that tends to be the case week in, week out. There's always a reason that someone's, you know, doing something about the situation if they're not doing well. So, look, we're expecting a few speed bumps, standard stuff, and, you know, we'll have to be resilient when they come. But we're in a great place, and the objective this year was a home playoff game. I think that can only ever be the objective. I think to win a league, you need that extra bit of fortune. Quite often it's fortuitous, you know, you really do just have a year that goes your way. Home playoffs was the target, and we're on track for that.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the games now are going to start to come thick and fast this time of year. You're back at Meadowbank on Tuesday as well for the visit of Oxford City, and they were the showing how competitive this division is, and that they were the early pace setters, and until you beat them, really, until the start of your current unbeaten run. That they've also, yeah, as you touched upon there, they've lost their manager recently, David Oldfield, heading to Weymouth.
Yeah,
are those the sort of chips in any armour that you look to exploit as an opposition manager? Are you looking for, you know, things that might be upsetting the other players that you can exploit?
During the season, it's a really great point that during the season, I've talked about being fortuitous and about things have to go your way. You know, during an ordinary season, you'll play teams that have just acquired new managers and they have an upturn of form. Welling had a little spell like that with Peter Taylor. You'll have teams that, you know, hit the skids, so to speak, and the manager departs and it's a good time to play them. And you know, during the season, it tends to go kind of up and down. But of course, you'd be lying if you didn't say that it's always nice to come across a good time to play someone. Mm. So, yeah, with Billericay, you know, they're on a bit of a resurgence. But we are the type of team, the players, very experienced, that they do almost respond better to the challenges than they do the sort of also-ran game. So we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, and you know, great that you got the success on the field again, and that's going well. But success on the field is great, but you've done that probably better than anybody else probably in recent seasons. But you look at the combined points per game table from last season, and you guys are heads and shoulders above everybody else at, I think, 2.1 points per game. But winning games doesn't necessarily make a great football club. And I think this is that's something that I've learned from you in particular in recent years. It's people that do that. And that's something that's always been key for you.
Yeah, honestly, it's the biggest tip I'd ever give anybody, you know, is that you have to have a nucleus of players. You're only ever really adding to the group. You see, we have the fortune of me being the owner. So, you know, whereas other clubs are more impatient. So when you see players and managers or players come and go, often that's because the manager's got different ideas, wants his own identity. But to be successful on the field, it's about continuity of players adding to the group, really. Really only ever kind of once or twice a year max, and only sort of 3 to 4 players. And it's trying to build up that continuity there that builds better relationships with the fans, the sponsors even, that get to know the players. So it's a model that's really worked for us. And, you know, off the field, we see them benefits.
Yeah, and you mentioned there that it helps with the fans in particular, because, you know, you say some of your squad have been there for years. There's that affiliation that those are, you know, particularly young fans see. But you're building crowds, you're building a community. The record attendance on Boxing Day in that Havant win in front of over 2,000 people there. Memories were going to
be. Yeah, we've had.
The
Ebbsfleet game was even surpassed the Havant game. For record crowd attendance. And, you know, the families and the kids love it. You know, let's remember, when we all went to football, let's not show our age, but when we all went to football, it's really easy to remember that there's non-league football if you're of the, you know, sort of mid to older generation. But actually, if you're sort of south of maybe 20, football's a TV sport to many people. And that is, you know, something we've learned. We've gone out of our way to bring in the youngsters and the families, school initiatives galore, etc. And the retention rate of those kids that love seeing their favourite players and building the connection is unbelievable. I mean, it would be absolutely truth to say that every school initiative we do, we sell probably 3 season tickets after that game to people that arrived at that game. So we're trying to bring them in, show them that old-fashioned culture of great football, you know, on your own high street, just down the road. You'll be home by 5:30, doesn't cost you a fortune, and actually you're going to really enjoy it.
And actually as well, you get to know those players and the people that are involved. You know, it's all well and good, you know, idolising your Premier League footballer, but I remember growing up in West London, you could go and meet the Chelsea players. You couldn't get anywhere within a 3-mile radius of a Chelsea player nowadays. And that's where non-league, I think, really can win.
I couldn't speak more. I couldn't agree more. The retention rate of people, I believe, that go to non-league football now is huge. I think they love how close up they can get to your point. They love the fact that they can be a match day mascot, you know, easily. You know, there's so many wins. We've got a junior Wanderers club now with hundreds of kids in. They idolise the players. They even idolise me, which I can't believe. But, you know, but it's, and so I'm really living the dream, if you like, of resonating with the kids like I did that are standing there. And, you know, shaking hands with their favourite player. It's quite incredible. And, you know, not enough clubs maybe really invest in that old-fashioned mindset of, you know, building a team that's there to stay.
Yeah, and we talk to clubs week in, week out about their kids set up, and that's talking about their kid, the kids that are playing within under the banner of that club's name. And you've got that as well, but it's also making them part of the community and not a distinct, separate entity, really. And I think that's what you've done really well. And similarly, with the ladies' team, founded, well, only 2020, and competing in Tier 6 of the women's pyramid there as well. And you've also, again, talk about people. You brought in your friend, Callum Best, as chairman there. And it just opens up so many more possibilities, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's football for the masses now. Again, it's a generation thing. And Callum's big on equality. And, you know, he saw it as a great opportunity to do something he's passionate about, both equality, both football. And as a club, we want to get behind it as well, because we kind of feel like, could we have a ladies' version of the men's team where we go through a few leagues? And we did, if I'm being honest, we identify it as a clever opportunity, because the money coming into women's football now and the TV deals, you know, if you look at where women's football might be in 5 years, it's a good time to grow. So, you know, it also widens our range of youth teams and everything else as well that go below that.
Yeah, and that's another example. You're fairly commercially astute, I think, too. You spoke about, you know, sponsors, but I've also noted that you call them partners as well, which it sort of, again, provides a better buy-in from them, I think, into a club, but by working with them rather than just, you know, taking some cash out of their wallet every month.
So what we do, like, you know, people always say, Dorking Wanderers, Mark White's loaded, right? And if only that were the case.
He's never bought me a beer yet. I don't know.
Exactly. We graft beyond belief. So if I told you, as of today, we're up to 72 partners. And those partners are Bleak sponsors, have varying packages around the club, sponsoring various assets from a player to a grandstand. But all of them get treated the same. We have network meetings with them. So the amount of business that they've shared reciprocally between companies having met through the football club. We have a Christmas party for them, bespoke. We have a summer event. Every match day, two or three of them will come down and be hosted by us and looked after, you know. And, you know, it really is a relationship with dual benefits, because it's really easy to want people's money for a one-sided relationship because you want to get a player, let's say. But actually, if you do it right, there's massive dual benefits. And that's what we try to do.
And some of those benefits, I can hear the... You still got that excitement in your voice. I mean, you could be on the verge of taking a club you founded in 1999 to the top of the non-league pyramid, effectively, into that highest level. Do you ever look back and think, well, that's pretty impressive? Or do you sometimes think back and say, what else could I have done in those 20-odd years?
Never the latter, because I think, you know, the football club's been my allotment, if that makes sense. It's like, you know, that's the hobby. I think if we get near that this year, it's going to be a pinch yourself moment. We've never really stopped really to admire it. We've just really worried about the next challenge. But, I mean, it would be phenomenal. Listen, what are we, 18 games? I mean, you know, 18 games in a great position, you know, arguably the best squad in the league. And, you know, but there's so many people that make the club tick. It is incredible. It's easily spoken about, but the volunteers, we've got up to 20 volunteers that we're friends with. Mm. You know, like, you know, we have a drink with them, we eat with them, we, you know, they come to the away days on the bus with us, on the player bus, and we've got so many, even at the playing side, we've got, you know, four scouts, we've got a strength and conditioning coach, we've got analysis teams, and pretty much all of it's voluntary, because people are getting behind the project, you know. So it's a big, big ship really now that we have, way beyond me. I'm just the captain, I guess you could argue.
Well, back in the day, I was a devotee to a little known strategy computer game called United on my ZX Spectrum. I'm showing my age now.
I remember it. Yeah.
It wasn't as smooth as Football Manager and Championship Manager, but it seemed more real. It was more about the club as a whole and not just the football management. Now, and I'll admit to the fact that I could hack into the code so that I boost the budget every now and then. That helped. But my reason for mentioning it there is, what excites you most? Is it the pitch side or the building the club and the community off the field?
I think it's the building of the club that motivates me, and seeing all the kids in the shirts and the crowds going up. But the winning has become quite a big habit. And I just like all the firsts it gives us. It's like a journey, you know, into Roots Hall this year. We went to Edgeley Park, Stockport. You know, we played some big matches in the last kind of two seasons, and you know, we genuinely just enjoy the journey, because when you've come from park leagues where you're putting the nets up and paying 50 quid to be there, you know, everything's a bonus. I don't think you ever shift that original kind of mindset, you know.
And you know, saying you get promotion at that next level, it's professional football in almost every sense. So now you're good, you're very good, but that good, are you good enough to manage on and off the field and compete against clubs with more years in the Football League than you guys have even been in existence?
Yeah, I think that's a great challenge for us, really. I think we'd like to show them how it's done. I think we've got some ideas as to how we do it. You know, I think, listen, as we've gone through the leagues, I think the revenue doors open up as you go through them naturally, albeit crowd, sponsorship, TV money, whatever. But listen, I'd like to have a go at it. I'd love to have a go at it. I'd love to be showing people there's another way to skin a cat. You know, but for now, I can't think about it too much, because there's a big few weeks ahead, really.
Yeah, I mean, you told me before that Mark White, the manager, only keeps his job while he's the best man for the job. But surely the big kid in you that wants to manage all the way to the Football League, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if I didn't think I was the right man for the job, I wouldn't do it. And if the success wasn't, or the objectives weren't met every season, I do love it. I do really enjoy it. Whoever takes it over has got big boots to fill in terms of me going into Barry Fry mode, you know. Honestly, it's like, I just think, well, we've got a model, the model works, we'll see how we get on with it.
Yeah, one more. We've seen Wrexham struggle for so many years at that top level to get out of the National League, and they've got Hollywood investment now. And this week, they've signed a player for a fee that would probably eclipse the annual revenue for most clubs at step four. Going up to that next level, could you look for external investment to take to that next step?
I think it would fall on your lap somewhere, probably, especially with the profile we've got and whatnot. I think there's doors we could open that we've not opened before that we could have done. But it's an interesting point you make, because I'd like to think you agree. But actually, if you look at the League Two and the National League, what's almost happened has been that it's been in existence so long that actually it's almost gone topsy-turvy.
Yes, yes.
So the bigger clubs belong in the National League and the smaller clubs are in League Two. So if ever there was a time, and I know there's lots of conversations about it, the three up, three down, or certainly a more recognisable promotion relegation, I think it's now. I think the way I would sum it up is this. It's never, ever been in the EFL's to their advantage more than now to promote more teams, because the clubs they're going to inherit are probably bigger than what they got. And that's the way you've got to look at it. So there's big incentive for them to change those rules.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I had a similar conversation with somebody the other day, and we sort of refer to it almost like the hotel industry. You know, almost the hotels in EFL 2 are your old school ones, where the ones in the National League have got all the mod cons, they've got all the things that everybody wants. And I certainly recognise that topsy-turvy thing that you mentioned there.
Yeah, 100%. I'm pretty sure that EFL would rather get rid of a team that's been struggling for donkey's years and take in Wrexham, who are putting in 8,000 to 9,000 a game in the National League. So I think everything evolves, and I do think that alongside 3G being allowed in those leagues, I think you can expect change really in the next couple of years.
I'm sure if there's anyone going to be spearheading some change, it'll be yourself. Mark White, best of luck at
the
weekend, and best of luck for the rest of the season, and thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
No problem. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Now, we'll find out later in our non-league paper section about the busy old week it's been in non-league, but it's been big signings, big moves, big changes. But the one snippet to bring the biggest smile was the news that the England C team is returning. A new international challenge match against Wales C is in the diary for the 30th of March. So who better to tell us more than old friend of the show, England C goalkeeping coach, and quite possibly England C's greatest ambassador too. I speak, of course, of Mick Payne. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mick.
Yeah, always good to speak with you, Tim, and say what you just said there. Yeah, in terms of smile, there's no doubt about it. Yeah, I've got the biggest smile on my face, and I'm sure everyone in non-league is so, so pleased.
Yeah, looking at your Twitter feed, I'll come to that later. Social media sometimes can be a bit dour and a bit sort of, but it, just seeing some of the responses that you got by retweeting out the fact that the England C team is going to be back playing this game in Wales, it was just nice to see the appreciation of what England C is all about.
Well, I think that's a great word, and great, you know, in terms of what you just said, in trying to really sort of say what the team is all about. It does really express that. And you're dead right, Tim. I mean, what's happened, you know, the amount of players, it's gone crazy. You know, it's gone crazy on Twitter, and the amount of players that have got back, ex-players, players who want the opportunity, clubs, supporters, you name it. Everyone's got on it, you know, got all over it, really. And, you know, they're so, so pleased. We should have an England C side. These are the boys who represent all these players in non-league. And it's been a long time coming back, but we're delighted to have it back. And I just want to say, really, in terms of all the people that have pushed hard to get it back, I just want to say a big, big thank you.
Yeah, and that's a big thank you from the whole of non-league. I mean, the last England C game, I think, was back in June 2019, that defeat to the Estonian under-23s. We had a few others penciled in, but they were lost due to the pandemic. And there were fears, the various efficiencies that have been enforced across the FA, that this side might not return. But it does, and I'm hoping that you do as well, alongside Paul Fairclough.
Well, we do. I mean, it's, you know, everybody had lots and lots of issues. Lots of people had lots and lots of problems. You know, the England C was just one of those teams. And, you know, I understand it. We get it. And, you know, in terms of where the FA were, in terms of getting the side back. But, you know, there's been people behind the scenes who have worked tirelessly to try to get it back on track. And they've done it. And you're dead right. You know, the last game was against Estonia. Hopefully, they're one of the sides who always appreciated us playing them. They always saw the games as competitive, but we've got this one against Wales, and as I said, it's very, very special. You know, you said it's the 30th of March, and let's hope we get a good crowd out there, because I'm sure you wouldn't ask me that, but I'm going to come straight in on it, Tim. You know, the side we can pick now is an open age side.
And that, that's got to put a smile on the non-league players up and down the country, that one.
Well, it has, because what it does, you say it puts a smile on their face, but it gives them a real opportunity, does it? Gives them an opportunity to get an England cap. You've already mentioned about the players who have previously played, and our, James Constable was one of ours who put it all over Twitter. He said it's the biggest thing that's ever happened in his career, and he scored. I always remember that in Italy. So these players who may have thought it's past them, in terms of getting an international honour, an international cap, an international shirt, and being part of an England setup. Now past them, they've now got a chance. And as I said, we've got it's an incredible group in the National League. I go down to him. It goes National League North, National League South, and even further down. You know, we have picked players, further down the pyramid. So all these guys, all these players have got a chance to say, you know what? We've got a chance of getting this squad, and for me, it should give them a real, not an opportunity, but a real sense of saying, you know what, we're going to go even harder to play well to get selected in this team.
Yeah. I believe the side was originally called the England non-league side when it first played in 1979. Since then, it's been National Game 11, the England semi-pro side, and more recently, the England C side. And there's an argument either way, I can see that. But when I look back at some of the sides of the past and the players, you've mentioned some of them there that have progressed right to the very top of the game in this country from the setup, England C seems a very good indicator of where it should stand in the chain of representative games.
Yeah, I think you're dead right. I mean, whether the name is right, that's up for debate. You know, you said it's the England semi-pro side, the England game, the National Game 11. It's a hard take on where we call the name, but it's got the name. And when we go and play these other countries, they're in awe, Tim. They're in awe of the England pyramid of football. They really are, because they didn't realise, or they don't realise, how far it goes to the top, to the bottom, and how good these players are who are playing. I mentioned to a number of people today, you see these players who are playing in the National League, there's guys there, who can command big transfer fees. We've seen that happen over these last two or three weeks, players coming in. And they have got players that have been in the professional game as such. All right, it might have not worked for them. They may have got, through as an under-18 play. And some of these guys have gone on and played for England under-16, 17, 18, right the way up. And then that's unfortunately been released, come to the National League or the league below and go again. And that's what, people don't realise how good the players are in this National League.
And you say about some of those players that have been at that higher level clubs and then come back down. And again, sometimes it's just chance or bad luck really that creates that circumstances and that sort of thing. But playing for the England C side, it's a genuine part of an apprenticeship for those lads who want to make it to the top level, isn't it? From the training that's in George's Park, being part of the wider setup, to travelling, representing your country. They're all essential skills that you can't really gain that whatever club you're at in the highest level of non-league. This is something extra, something special. And I think looking at the lads that have gone on to play at a higher level, this has been a massive part of them being able to succeed.
Yeah, like you just used the words, it's extra, but the word you just used is special. It is. It's very, very special, and it's a great opportunity. You're dead right. You know, you mentioned, you know, we're in the England C setup. Myself and Paul Fairclough have been around the team, you know, for many, many years. Paul's been, you know, incredible. I say I've been with him. It's got to be over 17, close to 18 years. It might be longer. we've been involved with this setup. I don't know if we're the longest serving within the FA of having teams. I don't know, but I'm sure we must be.
Yeah.
But the players themselves that have come through, produced, that have gone on, it's just mind-blowing. It's just a real a group of players who have gone on, a conveyor belt. That's the word I'm looking for, a conveyor belt of players that have gone right the way through the England C setup and played at the top level. And when I say top level, played in the Premiership, played international football. I mean, even at the moment, you go back to the Estonia game. We had a game, I think it was the previous game we played Estonia, and we had the likes of Ethan Pinnock, who was playing, who's now playing centre-half for Brentford in the Premiership. We had Kiefer Moore playing in that game, who's like a massive part of the Welsh setup, you know, looking to go to the World Cup this year. The boys, Jamal Lowe, played in that team. I mean, that's just from one side. There's so many. You know, we have Jamie Vardy in the group, you know, a couple of times he got called up. Unfortunately, he didn't play, he got injured. David Stockdale was the closest one that from our keepers who got in Capello's squad for the full England side. So there's so many. It's just incredible, really.
Yeah, you can tell from the way you talk about it. As I said, you're England C's greatest ambassador, but you must have some great memories too. I mean, talking about your Twitter feed, your pinned tweet is of the team that beat Bermuda 6-1 in 2013. Not only have you travelled the world, you know, Russia, Cyprus, Middle East, Caribbean, but also you've been part of that development of some of those young footballers that have gone up that ladder. You know, looking at that Bermuda photo, we've got Andre Gray, Sam Clucas, James Norwood, Marlon Jackson, names that people that don't know non-league, they know those names.
Exactly, Tim. I'm really pleased, you know, you've done your research on it, because I know you would have done anyway, but you're right. I mean, that was an incredible one. That was what a team that was. And we did not put a performance on that day. But you say, like the Andre Greys, you know, of this world, who's commanded, let's get it right, commanded big transfer fees. Same Sam Clucas, big transfer fees. You know, if people want to realise that they started in non-league, you know, and made their name and then commanded these transfer fees to go into the big boys, if you like, into the Premiership and so forth, it is, you know, as I said, you say I like to sort of big up the England. It's the biggest honour of all time for me. It's the biggest honour of all time, and those players. And as I said, I can't even sort of comprehend, you know, being involved in the games where we've played, where we've been, and the things that I believe this team has done. You know, we're great ambassadors as well. This team, we go out. You know, we went out to Jordan. You know, going back to that game, we went out to Jordan. I can remember it now. We played at the King Abdullah Stadium, and the boy Luke Berry, who's playing, he was at Luton, I'm not sure if he's still there, I'm sure he is, but Luke Berry scored, and we played in the stadium, 1-1-0, but it wasn't just that, it was the way, the work we did, you know, or the players and everyone concerned. We had the, you know, sort of Syrian sort of refugees came close by, these young people, and the British Embassy got involved, and UNICEF got involved. And we put on a session, you know, of coaching with these youngsters, you know, to do that. I mean, I'm shivering even talking to you about it. That gives me a real tingle. You know, go and do that. The football was terrific. But to go and do that and be an ambassadorial group of players to see what goes on in the rest of the world, I just think that's what England C bring. It brings so much to so many different people.
Yeah, well, they do say travel the world and become a better person, and you sort of understand the world better. But it's just about understanding. Now, and I'm not sure that, you know, I've mentioned, you know, people that don't know non-league, you know, have heard those names. But I'm not sure even people within non-league understand that while it's England C, often these games have been against the under-21 full international under-23 sides of the other nation. So the standard's very high. And I remember you telling me a couple of names that I think played against the Belgium's under 21 side in the past?
Yeah. Well, no, you're dead right. And I go back to my previous point. These other countries don't have this infrastructure of teams or these leagues. And we go as an England see, and of course we are. We're playing, you know, against their under 21s or their sort of B team, if you like. I mean, you know, you're right. When we played Belgium, and we won 1-0. Seb Brown was in goal for me, and up the other end for Belgium was Courtois playing in goal. You know, Courtois was playing. Centre half was Toby Adevero, you know, who's had a great career at Tottenham. And we win 1-0. Matthew Barnes Homer scores, and we beat them. We played Turkey. When we played Turkey at Dartford, great crowd. What a night that was. All right, we lost 1-0, but what a night that was. And they had the boy Toscan playing up top, who had a transfer to Everton. He didn't score against us, but players of real high earners, high sort of in terms of their credibility in their national teams. And as I said, when we go to these places, they just cannot believe these are the sort of players that are playing in the pyramid, if you like, you know, further down, how good quality they are, because they're outstanding, these players.
Yeah, and the players are not only outstanding as players, but I think, you know, with yourself and Paul and the rest of the backroom team as well, you're talking about the ambassadorial role there, but they do, whenever I've come across someone that's played for England C, it's almost like they've ticked an extra box. They are great ambassadors. They're great modern day footballers. You mentioned, you know, David Stockdale. I remember some of the other goalkeepers that you've sort of had in your sights that have gone on higher as well. Were Matt Lennon. I think, again, going back to that thing, that their experience at England C level has made them better players, but also better people.
Well, I think I'm really pleased you brought that up, because that's exactly what we always try to set out. Yes, when they're called up for the squad, we have the squad, we have the contingency squad. But when they come to, you know, Paul's brilliant at that, and hopefully, you know, I help him in lots of ways. But the way he organises them, the way he tells them in terms of what they're representing and where they've come from, their journey and so forth, and then he gels them, you know. We gel them. We don't have them together that long, you know. If we, you know, this game coming in Wales, we play on the Wednesday. We most probably meet up on the Sunday. They've played Saturday. Let's get that right. They've played on the Saturday, so Sunday is only going to be light in terms of, you know, cool down or just a little bit of light work. But then that evening it'll be a get together. Find out about them, you know. Find out about what makes them tick. What they bring to the party, you know, in terms of their what they bring as a person, as you just mentioned. Are they quiet? Are they strong? Have they got a view? You know, all these, and we do lots of little bits and pieces with them in terms of interviewing each other, and we find out so much about them, where they've come from, their family life, their knockbacks, the things that have gone well from things that haven't gone so well. And that's on the Sunday. And then Monday we do a bit of work. We'll have a couple of sessions. But remember, we've got a game Wednesday. We can't go crazy. So But there's a lot of work done behind the scenes to come back to your point of making them not realise, that's the wrong word, but to make them have an appreciation of what they're doing and what they've achieved and what they stand for. And as I said, you've already mentioned right at the top of the show, these guys, it's a memory that they have for the rest of their lives. And that's what we want to leave them with, that they're offering so much to themselves, but their families and everybody else that they're representing.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier, James Constable, Matty Tubbs, you know, these are players that have achieved so much in their career, but it's almost as if this England C thing, it was a bit like meeting Santa for anybody, any
like
lad
that.
That's played in that. Yeah, now, the game in the diary is March the 30th, a 7 p.m. kickoff at Caernarfon Town. It's not Cyprus, it's not the Caribbean, but it is England C. And yeah, we've spoken so much about the wonders of England C. It's a match to savour, but also a game that has to be supported if we want all this to be continued. So we need to get the fans there.
Well, that's exactly that. I mean, we've just got our toe in the water, for a better word, to get back on the bus or back on the horse, whichever one, you know, you want to use. We're back on it, and you're dead right. If we, you know, decide that we're going to select. We would love as many people in terms of where we are with it, in terms of, you know, come and support this group and everybody else. And if they can do that, it's just, you know, we'd love to see as many people behind it, because we want this side to really be a side that continues again for as many years as possible.
Mm. And I can't let you go without mentioning your own background either, Mick. Nowadays, even at non-league level, there's a coach for this, there's an analyst for that, and there's a multitude of people itching to get into those jobs as well. Now, back in the day, there was a manager, and maybe there was a guy with a magic sponge and a bucket. You got into coaching goalkeepers almost by accident, because it wasn't really a role.
No, I mean, you're saying that it wasn't really a role. I mean, I was very, very fortunate. You know, it's a, and I say it's not a role, but it's a massive role now within the game. You know, everyone's got a goalkeeping coach. Everyone's got a, you know, and when you say a goalkeeping coach, I think we're more than that. And I'm not going to say big myself up for it, but we're more than that, because yes, you're working with the keepers, but you're working with the team. You know, I always say if a team's going to be successful, they've got to have a successful goalkeeper. They've got to have a good goalkeeper. So you do work with it. And you're right, you know, people are realising now how important the position is, because I say it many, many times, Tim, many, many times. The goalkeeping position is a specialised one. It needs specialised coaching and special understanding. And if you've got that within the group, and yeah, I've gone along the way. I got my badges. I've got this opportunity. And yeah, I went and coached in America. I've coached within Tottenham, Crystal Palace, within their academies. But as I say, yes, it's the goalkeeping coach, but I feel I had a lot more to the group in terms of, like we've just spoken about, you know, trying to get into their psyche, get into the, make them realise how great it is to play for their country or play for their team and what they can bring. So I do believe I owe add a lot to not just the goalkeepers, but everybody else who's in the group.
Yeah, and you're saying how important goalkeeping coaches are. In recent weeks, I've spoken to a number of managers as well, and saying, you know, looking at the current trend, I wonder whether goalkeepers actually make better managers and coaches than a centre forward. You know, traditionally, it's been the centre forwards maybe jumped into coaching, or maybe the centre half, but there does seem to be more and more goalkeepers. I guess because you're seeing, like we see managers now, they sit up in the stand, don't they, to go and watch the game rather than from the dugout. As a goalkeeper, you're seeing the whole game pretty much for the full 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, as I said, people getting back into the game once they played and coming into the coaching side or the management side, or, you know, in terms of being part of the, you know, team sort of progression. But you're right. I mean, you could be in a game as a goalkeeper, and you do. You analyse the situation. You analyse so many things from an attacking point of view, from a defending point of view. You look at things in terms... I do believe this. I do. You're dead right. I think we have a different sort of mindset of how we want the game to be played and how it should be played and what needs to be done in certain situations. Because when you're looking at the pitch where we are as goalkeepers, you're seeing the whole game all the time. And what's necessary for certain players in certain roles. So, yeah, I think it's something that the goalkeepers are getting more and more into sort of the management coaching roles. I really do believe that.
Who knows? Mick Payne may have coached the future England manager as well.
You never know.
Now, we spoke to you during lockdown about keeping your neighbours fit and healthy, physically and mentally, which was great, but there's nothing better than being back enjoying football in a stadium that's full of fans, is there?
Oh, no. I mean, I say it many times. I'm extremely privileged. I feel honoured to be back. You know, as you said, there's been fans who have been absent from games. And luckily, I've been at games where there's been no fans, you know, doing some summarising work. And I've been very, very, very lucky indeed. And you're dead right, having the fans back in there. And we know, Tim, you know, in terms of what the fans bring for and against, and I mean that in a good way, for and against, because they can get onto your players when things are not going so well. But when things are going well and you've got the fans in your corner who can, you know, support you through thick and thin, that's what you need. And there's no doubt about it. When you say influence, I do believe they influence the game. I mean, I've got to say, I was at a game the other day, or it wasn't a non-league game, but
I was at a game at Charlton versus Morecambe the other day. 22,000 there just quickly. And for me, they actually sucked the ball in for the second goal. The fans behind the goal sucked the ball in. I know it sounds a crazy statement, but, you know, you could just feel them really, the feel for their team and the way they wanted the team to play. And the ball sort of like kept gravitating towards that goal. And I believe that was down to having the fans in the stadium.
Well, I'm not sure if we can get 22,000 down to Caernarfon Town on the March the 30th, but hopefully as many listeners and non-league fans can get there as possible to go and watch the England C team take on the Wales C team. So that's March the 30th. We'll talk about it nearer the time, 7 p.m. kickoff. But Mick, you and I could talk forever, and we do sometimes, but it's been great to get you on the Non-League Football Show. Thank you for joining us, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Jim, always a pleasure and be part of your show. And as I said, non-league football is, for me, is the, well, it's just the greatest thing around for me. So support it. And as I say, if we can get as many people to that game, we'd love to see them.
So running off of this week's show, it's news time again. Let's head on over to non-league paper Towers. It's welcome back to the non-league football show. Senior writer at the non-league paper, Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure, particularly when we have weeks like this. Is it me or has it been one of those weeks in non-league?
Yeah, it does seem to feel like that, doesn't it? It's one of those sort of weeks where the twists and turns sort of non-league and, you know, all the sort of varying stories come to light, really. So yeah, very very sort of different and busy week, really. But I suppose that is sort of typical non-league.
It is typical non-league, and just as ever, you know, to make our lives more difficult trying to report on this, there's a number of stories that they're out there, and you know, stuff in the public domain, and but we still don't really know what the outcomes of them are. I mean, one of them, there's a number of stories with the results up in the air, shall we say. In the FA Vars, I see that Athletic Newham are due to host Brockenhurst in the fifth round in a couple of weeks' time in the FA Vars. But they've been charged with two counts of playing a suspended player, one in round three against Abbey Rangers, one in round four against Littlehampton. And it begs a question as to why the earlier one has only just come to light. And we've got no word from the teams or the FA, as far as I'm aware, when we're recording this, as to what happened next. And it's difficult to know, really, because normally it would be the team that got beaten in the previous round that steps into their place. But I guess Abbey Rangers, who were the team in the previous round, would probably be a little bit upset by that.
Yeah, it is a bit of a strange one, isn't it? Because usually, like you say, these sort of things come to light and are found out. But yeah, I suppose to sort of go two rounds in the same competition with that issue is unusual. Obviously, it does sound like bad news, really, doesn't it, for the club? You know, it's not often that these sort of things happen and clubs are sort of let off the hook or sort of appeals are won. That kind of thing. So, yeah, it doesn't particularly spell good news, that situation there. But, yeah, we'll have to see what comes of it. And like you say, interesting, obviously, you know, with games having been played in between sort of the two incidents, then, sort of interesting scenario.
And, it's bad news for the secretary. And I'm always saying that the secretarial job at non-league football is one of the jobs that you'd never want to take on, really, if you actually knew what it involved. And, I can't imagine that a secretary has deliberately played a suspended player. And it's just one of those...
Don't put people off the job, Tim.
Well, I know. I don't like to put people off the job, but I think that people do need to know, you know, the
dangers.
The stresses and strains of what this can do to you. Please do step up to the plate and do take on a secretarial role, but maybe get yourself checked out by your GP first and make sure that you're having regular blood pressure checkups, I would have thought, because it's a stressful old job, as is being a non-league journalist as well, because we there's a number of stories, as I say, that we still don't know the results for. One of those is the situation at Chesterfield. Manager James Rowe suspended pending a club investigation into misconduct charges. Danny Webb stepped up to take charge of the team, but it's not ideal for preparations at the top of a very competitive National League, and Stockport County have now taken the top spot there as well.
Yeah, it's an astonishing sort of turn of events, really. At Chesterfield, obviously, you know, it wasn't that long ago I was there at Stamford Bridge watching them in the FA Cup playing Chelsea. Of course, they were top of the National League, like you say, earlier this week. Obviously, Stockport have capitalised by winning on Tuesday when Chesterfield didn't have a game. And yeah, like you say, an issue surrounding James Rowe, which obviously we can't say too much on at the moment until we find out the result of that. But yeah, it's a sort of very difficult situation, I imagine, for the club. Everything was heading in the right direction, and you know, this will have undoubtedly sort of stalled that, really, I imagine. Obviously, you know, they may turn out to win on Saturday against Eastleigh, but not having James Rowe for the long term will be an issue. But you know, like I say, we have to wait and see as to what comes out of this investigation. But you look at sort of Stockport now, top of the National League, and you know, really sort of seems to be putting teams away with these, and you know, suddenly it all sort of looks like it's pointing in their favour, really. Sort of an incredible sort of week, really, for the National League.
Yeah, and you say the twists and turns. Yeah, I say about the blood pressure of a secretary at non-league level and journalists, but also anybody involved in the club. You say you go from that moment of playing Chelsea at Stamford Bridge to a week of disarray, shall we say, at the moment. You can see the appeal of being one of those obscure clubs that just sit around mid-table year after year and sort of avoid relegation and avoid the playoff hassle and just enjoy their football, because sometimes football doesn't always take centre stage. And hopefully things will get resolved and we can move on about talking about football. But in the meantime, on the managerial merry-go-round, we saw some quick switches, really, at the weekend. Paul Cox departing Kettering Town and taking over at Boston United, and Kettering swiftly replacing him with Ian Colfax. Both names well known to this show, well known known to non-league, and I'm sure we'll be hoping to have further success at their new clubs.
Yeah, two good appointments for both clubs, I think. Obviously, Kettering will be disappointed to have lost Paul Cox, but you can't go far wrong with getting a manager in who's only recently won that division. So yeah, interesting turn of events there in that division. Obviously, in Culverhouse, had a really good time with Kings Lynn, back-to-back promotions to get them into the National League. Paul Cox was very much sort of turning things around at Kettering. You know, they'd really sort of been struggling sort of in recent seasons, really, but he had them heading in the right direction. And obviously, it will be a disappointment for the club to lose into a league rival. But like I say, you know, getting Ian Culverhouse in, someone of his experience and what he's done in non-league already, it was a really good appointment. They were pretty unlucky in midweek, by all accounts, to lose to Kidderminster, who are obviously going really well at the moment. Kettering playing 45 minutes with a centre-back in goal. So yeah, that wasn't the ideal start for Ian Colhouse and Paul Bastock going in there, but I'm sure they'll start picking up some results soon.
Yeah, and you say great appointments, people with great experience. Although I have heard some discussions this week about the managerial merry-go-round becoming a bit like a game of cards, where it's the same cards going from one hand to another, and sort of, you know, particularly I guess with these two switching, you know, moving around as they did, but the same managers going around, and maybe some young managers missing out or not getting the opportunity. But I think certainly lower down in the pyramid, we're seeing clubs taking punts on the younger managers and managers looking to get into the game. Lower down, one of those experienced managers that has resigned this week, Chris Nunn, going from Biggleswade Town again, an old friend of the show, and and back up in the National League. You touched on it earlier. We've got the TV game this weekend, Eastleigh against Chesterfield. And there won't be a first team manager effectively in charge at either dugout because Ben Strevens and Eastleigh have parted company this week, and that was on the back of defeat to Dover.
Yeah, slightly surprised by that, really. Obviously, the defeat to Dover was, you know, a disaster, really. Obviously, that was Dover's first win of the season. So, you know, that's not a good result. And that was their fourth defeat in a row after losing in the trophy to Notts County and in the league to Halifax and Stockport. So all three of those teams, you know, obviously top teams in the National League that they've lost to recently. And then obviously Dover, who are struggling. You know, it leaves them mid-table in the National League. Perhaps the club has sort of ambitions to be in that top 10 and sort of knocking on the door of the playoffs. But yeah, I think that's pretty harsh, really. You know, you look at Ben House moving on only recently into the Football League, and you know, there's been so many other players Ben Strevens has lost because they've been developed and have moved on higher. Joe Tomlinson, Josh Hare, Rob Atkinson, you know, so I think he's done a really, really sort of good job there at Eastleigh. And yeah, like I say, sort of surprised to see them, you know, agree to part company by mutual consent. But, you know, obviously Ben Strevens, I think, will be hot property for other jobs. You know, he took Eastleigh into the playoffs in his first season, where they were beaten on penalties by Salford, who obviously went and won the entire thing at Wembley. So yeah, I think he leaves there with sort of a lot of credit in the bank, really. And Eastleigh will be thankful for the work he did there, sort of stabilising the club coming out of the Stuart Donald era, and sort of having to realign the finances and move the squad to a more younger base, and you know, they've certainly done that in terms of developing players and bringing players through the club's youth system as well. So yeah, surprised to see it, but yeah, Ben Strevens, I'm sure, will be back somewhere else soon and will be very much success again at another club.
Yeah, and equally, yeah, as we speak, we almost speak about every week. Eastleigh, the job there, yeah, they're mid-table. They're nearer the playoffs than they are certainly the relegation zone. So again, any manager would be salivating probably at the opportunity there. Maybe not the finances of other clubs in that division, but an opportunity to use it as a springboard and move forwards. You mentioned Ben House leaving Eastleigh for Lincoln City there earlier, and another striker that I think you've mentioned a number of times this season. It was left out of the card squad for Bromley midweek, but Tavonga Campbell, now a confirmed departure from Woking, signed a 2.5-year deal up at Rochdale.
Yeah, that would be a loss for Woking. Third highest scorer in the National League with 13 goals. He was sort of on the sort of footballing scrap heap a little bit in the summer. You know, he went on trial with Woking. He'd sort of bounced around clubs in recent seasons and sort of hadn't found his feet. But, you know, under Alan Dowson at Woking, he sort of hit it off. And, you know, his contract was up this coming summer, so you know, as much as Woking wanted to keep him, they offered him new terms to become the highest paid player at the club, but you know, I think the lure of getting back into the Football League, and from Woking's perspective, you know, taking what I believe to be a six-figure fee in the process, you know, it sort of seems to suit all parties, really. So that'll be a blow for Woking. You know, I think that, you know, the club has hopes of finishing in the top half or even the top 10. So that will be a disappointment. But obviously, they've signed Nicky Kabamba recently on loan, which is a good signing. George Oakley will be coming back from injury soon. So, you know, it's not a complete disaster on the striking front. But yeah, they'll certainly, certainly would have liked to have him come or to have stuck around a bit longer. But yeah, to get that sort of money for him is no bad thing, all the same.
Money's great, but replacing a striker is always difficult, and the money commanded for some of those fees was highlighted as well this week. We've mentioned previously that the Welsh clubs fall under the transfer deadline. So 31st of January approaching fast there. And this week, Wrexham made the bold move of signing Ollie Palmer from AFC Wimbledon for a club record fee, I believe, of £300,000 in non-league. It's certainly a statement of intent at Wrexham, another one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of eye-watering money, really, for non-league and a club record signing for Wrexham as well, which, you know, given their history, sort of tells you how big this is, really. On Tuesday he got off to the perfect start, scoring on his debut. They'll be hoping for many more goals from him as well. But yeah, real statement signing that for Wrexham. Showing they mean business. I'm slightly surprised they sort of haven't signed a couple more maybe this month, but there's still time in the next few days. But yeah, real sort of big move, and you know, further sort of strengthens the case about National League being, you know, on a par with the Football League in terms of League Two and sort of the spending power that's in that division. So a real sort of big move that one, probably the biggest one we'll see, I imagine, this month, which is a pretty easy prediction to make, really.
You wouldn't have heard, but earlier on in the show I spoke to Mark White, the manager at Dorking Wanderers, and he was saying that he almost feels, and I think I do agree with him, that the National League and the EFL 2 now are probably almost in the wrong position. They're sort of there's probably more strength in the National League than there is in League Two. When you're looking at clubs as a whole, and where they're heading to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sort of the idea, you know, like we saw with sort of Salford, you know, these clubs sort of try to build a squad that can obviously win promotion from the National League, but then obviously really sort of hold its own and go again in League Two. Obviously, that's not quite sort of worked out for Salford since they went up, but you know, that'll be the idea for Wrexham. That, you know, they don't want to be hanging around in these divisions for long. You know, they want to progress and progress quickly. So. I think that's the idea behind it. We'll have to wait and see.
I guess there's always the risk that you come down back down very quickly if you're not sort of prepared to be pushing for promotion, because as much as it's difficult to get up, it could quite easily be a slippery slope to come back down, I would imagine, the season after.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, I think to be fair, historically, National League teams, you know, always hold their own in League Two, but you know, you can very sort of easily, almost sort of like Salford are doing now, where you look where they are in the league, and it doesn't really look like they're going to be, in that mix for promotion. You can sort of, hit a bit of a wall. I think you probably look at sort of Forest Green; they would have expected to have been out of League Two by now, but it's only really looking like this season that they've got a really sort of decent chance at it. So yeah, you can never sort of tell or predict really in football which way things are going to go. But you have to try and sort of put yourself in the best position to move forward, really. And yeah, that's what Wrexham are trying to do.
Yeah, and not being able to predict what's going to happen. We did have some good news earlier this week, and we heard from Mick Payne earlier about this return of the England seaside with a game in Wales at the end of March, which is good news for non-league football as a whole, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There was obviously a bit of concern, really, whether the England C team would be coming back, because it's had such a long sort of break from due to COVID and other things. Good to see that sort of England is back on focus again. I believe it's going to be an open age squad this time, which is a bit different to what it has been in recent years. Usually it's under 23 players, but for this fixture, because Wales C are also an open age team, yeah, it seems like you can pick anyone from non-league. So that'll be an interesting dynamic, sort of, yeah, people already sort of drawing up their dream squads, I think. So yeah, they're very much looking forward to seeing who Paul Fairclough picks for that. But yeah, that'll be another cracking sort of game against Wales, because yeah, the last two have been really good as well. So anyone who can get to that, get, I believe it's in Wales, isn't it? Yeah. So anyone who can get there and have a look, then do those England C fixtures, always a good watch.
Yeah, and well, always a good watch, always a good read, the non-league paper every Sunday and Monday. What else can we expect to read in this weekend's paper, David?
Yeah, so obviously lots in there, reaction to that England C news. Of course, we preview Kidderminster's FA Cup game ahead of next week when they take on West Ham. I spoke to Ollie Palmer, as we've spoken about his move to Wrexham. Also another Ollie who's been grabbing the headlines, Ollie Babington, who scored a wonder goal for Clevedon Town, which has sort of very much gone viral, and even had FIFA tweeting how it could be a contender for the next Puskas Award. So, yeah, something to have a look out for there. Steve Hill returns with a column. I also spoke to Ian Culverhouse. We have a piece on Chorley as well. And those more in there, all the transfer news, along with everything from steps 3 and 4 as well, and all the matches. So, yeah, very busy week and busy edition.
Yeah, well, we look forward to reading all about it at the weekend after a busy weekend of football. David Richardson's Non-League Paper, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks, Tim.
And that is it for this week. Thank you to all of my guests, as ever. Thank you to everybody for listening. You can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, and myself there, Tim, at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. As ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Remember, stay safe, enjoy your football, thank you, and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.